Numerous reports indicate that manufacturing has emerged as the favorite target of ransomware groups and hackers. In response, a new report from Industrial Media discusses the evolution of industrial cybersecurity, its current state, and the tactics hackers are using, including phishing schemes, malware, and ransomware attacks. It also details solutions and arming manufacturers with the knowledge and resources needed to win more fights on this highly complex and ultra-competitive battlefield. Download the industrial sector's new battlefield by going to manufacturing.net/cyber. Hi, I'm Jeff Ranke, Editorial Director of Manufacturing.net and Manufacturing Business Technology. Welcome to Security Breach. Forgive me, but to set the table for today's episode, I need to state the obvious. First of all, regardless of what you hear from some, ransomware in the industrial sector is at an all-time high in terms of frequency and cost. Additionally, zero-day and day-one vulnerabilities are being discovered at a historic level, and patching continues to be a challenge. Phishing schemes are increasing in their frequency and complexity. Asset visualization and endpoint security have become more daunting thanks to technology-driven expansions of the industrial attack surface. And then there's AI, S-bombs, and botnets all waiting to wreak havoc on your ICS. All of these factors, along with the growing complexity of the hacker community, means that industrial cybersecurity is no longer just about white and black hats. Rather, some would argue that perhaps the most important player in the cybersecurity arena now wears red. The gathering storm of activity on both sides of the firewall is placing a heightened priority on the role of red teams and the penetration testing attack simulation functions they perform. And I'm pretty sure my guest for today's episode would agree. It's my pleasure to welcome Guy Bergerano to the show. He's the CEO of SafeBreach, a leading provider of breach and attack simulation tools and services. Guy, thanks so much for joining us today, and welcome to Security Breach. So before we get started here, I know one of the big things that you like to talk about that SafeBreach is really known for is the breach and attack simulation offerings that you have. This sounds like some kind of traditional red team type penetration testing, but everybody takes things goes at things a little bit differently. So maybe you could just kind of give us an overview of what that means to you and from your perspective.
Sure, Jeff, and thanks for having me. Well, I would say that SafeBreach or breach and attack simulation in general is anything but the traditional red teaming. And if you think about the concept of challenger controls, the traditional way doing that with red teams and pen testers would lack the consistency, would require some expertise and knowledge, and definitely doesn't have the scale. So when you think about what breach and attack simulation brought to the market, is actually taking the red team concept and actually got it on steroids. So if you think about, being able to consistently run millions of attacks against your security architecture and in a consistent way that shows you every time what's the result and connects you to the security controls in order to improve their actions, it's a different ballgame.
So how has this kind of evolved over time? I mean, we know that the bad guys are certainly getting more sophisticated by the minute. How have you adjusted sort of some of your strategies to match that?
Well, there are a few aspects of it. First of all, I think that breach and attack simulation as a market evolved in a way that, we all started with the red side of things. So bringing the attack into your premises in a safe manner. And we've evolved into helping actually the blue side. So incorporating the output of our platform into your security defenses so they can improve over time. And that's, I think, kind of how the market evolved over time. The ability to actually cope with how the attackers are evolving relies on the fact that, especially in SafeBreach, we have a framework that allows us to capture the logical actions that attackers are doing in a very simple way. And so we're able to actually, whenever there's a new method, a new permutation of an attack, we're, very easy for us to incorporate that within our platform. And so we have an SLA with our customers. We're providing an SLA of 24 hours. Whenever you hear about a cert alert or a new attack in the market, we have that in 24 hours. And that's part of the proactiveness level that we promised our customers.
One of the things I caught in looking at the site is there's a saying on there how you want to think like a hacker, defend like a CISO. I thought that was a really interesting sort of mentality to try to stimulate. Could you talk to us a little bit about that attitude and how that is a little bit of a shift of mindsets?
Yeah, well, you know, at the end, the goal for security teams is not to create security for security. You need to run a business. And so how do you serve that purpose in enabling the business to move, you know, faster in a safe manner? And so to bring on the offensive mindset to the security team and all the way to the CISO. So the decisions will be based on an actual understanding of what will happen tomorrow if an attacker will try to, you know, to create some kind of an impact on our premises, on our data, on our customers, and to deliver that all the way to the boardroom and connect, you know, the dots between the technical aspects of the attack and the business impact. I think this is critical. And, you know, we're able to do that with our customers. So, you know, you're not really setting up a hope strategy, but you're actually looking at, you know, what can bring us down? You know, what's the likelihood of that? What do we need to do and take action? So you're very much predictable in the way that you structure security.
How has that conversation kind of changed as well? I would assume just as, you know, the whole breach and attack simulation strategy has changed and morphed, I would think that conversation in terms of bringing it home into a real world dynamic has also evolved over time and getting sort of upper level management to really buy into cybersecurity. What have you seen in terms of what are some of the different messaging or that perception has changed, especially in manufacturing over the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that, you know, obviously the economics are driving everything, and the macroeconomics in the last few years, you know, really puts security teams and CISOs in a position where they need to show the ROI. They need to explain why they need, you know, 20% increase in their budget for next year, and by how much will they reduce the risk for the company. So if you cannot measure that, if you cannot provide that mindset, then there's no point in, you know, building a strategy that doesn't really drive the business. And so what we've seen across, you know, the different verticals, and especially in manufacturing, is the ability to really measure what's the cost of avoidance. If I'm not, you know, if I will not deploy a security control in a certain place, or it will not be configured well, what can be done here? And, you know, if my manufacturing flow will be down for 2 hours, I can actually measure that and understand what's the revenue impact. So being able to put that testing mindset into your security strategy, and to measure and to report to upper management on, you know, what are my gaps and what do I need to do in order to fix them. Again, that will tie to a dollar amount eventually. I think this is critical.
No, that's great. I mean, in manufacturing, we love ROI. So being able to present that business world concept and application, I think would go a long way. One of the things I'm always curious about too, I mean, with Industry 4.0 technologies, Internet of Things, whatever sort of umbrella term you want to use, we're expanding the attack surface. I mean, there's more stuff to secure. Have you seen that slow down? Are you seeing people more reticent to expand and bring on some of these type of connected technologies because they are more informed about the cybersecurity element of it as well?
When you think about manufacturing and the attack surface, you know, increased as you mentioned, I think that, you know, CISOs want to be ahead of the curve and to provide solutions and not to wait for that connectivity to happen, because it will happen eventually. I think the limitations that manufacturing has in terms of deploying technologies in many of the manufacturing areas where, you know, you don't have the right resources, IT resources to deploy, puts a lot of risk on those manufacturers. And so how do you protect those environments? How do you make sure that the IT and OT environments, you know, are segregated in the right way? And so there's a lot of, you know, room for improvement in terms of understanding what will be the impact from those connected areas. And I think a system like ours really helps organizations to understand, first of all, what's the risk. If I'm connecting a third party or a new, you know, new environment, new OT environment, what does that mean before I even start to, you know, implement security controls? And then it could be very prescriptive with what controls you implement. It can be a detective, you know, a mechanism rather than a prevention control, which puts less stress on the environment. So you can identify when there's an attack and actually take action rather than block everything. So it can be very prescriptive with what solutions you put in place.
Well, and that's great to hear, because we don't want to have that paralysis by analysis dynamic where just because there is more to secure, more to defend, that people are reticent to make those investments. Because like you said, if they don't, you're going to fall behind. And we know how competitive manufacturing has become, especially with all those, basically all the borders being broken down. It's a global economy right now, so you need to stay competitive that way too. You know, one of the things too I wanted to ask is, as you're dealing with a lot of these different attack simulations and analyzing a lot of these different breach potentials, is there anything that you're seeing right now that's different? I mean, we see basically a lot of people talking about hackers not really doing anything new or revolutionary, just maybe doing some of the old stuff better. So I'm just kind of curious from your perspective, are you seeing anything new? Are there any groups or tactics that are, I don't know, playing a part in what you're trying to do to help defend the industrial control system?
Yeah, well, you know, innovation is always there in terms of, by the way, both sides, the defenders and the attackers. But I would say that still, unfortunately, many organizations are not able to actively defend against known attacks. And part of the mindset that needs to be changed in the industry is that a lot of the organizations are trying to chase after, you know, the unknowns and the zero days and the anomalies and those that, you know, chasing a ghost, literally, instead of really understanding, you know, what are the tools that, you know, Lockbit has and how can I protect against APT29? These things are already there and available for them. But somehow I would say the overall security industry drives a lot of, you know, the teams to actually try and deal with the unknown. And I think that balance needs to reinstate, and people need to think about, it's not the basics, but whatever is existing in the market, and to defend against that well, and then they can allocate resources to the less known part of security.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people we've had on the program, we pick your analogy, it's the blocking and tackling, it's getting that low-hanging fruit and sort of going from there. But there is this sort of anxiety or tendency, I guess you could say, to want to boil the ocean, you know, eat the elephant, take on everything all at once. When you're working with customers, how do you slow them down and just get them to focus on, like you just said, the things we know, the things that we can handle and we can grow from there?
Well, I'll tell you what, two things. First of all, you're right. You know, we have in our platform around 30,000 different attack permutations, and everyone really wants to just shoot it all and see how they play, right?
Yeah.
And when we work with customers, we always, you know, reference our technology not as a product but as a program. And so we work with customers, you know, hand in hand in kind of a crawl, walk, run attitude, where, you know, let's start with the baseline. Let's understand, you know, what are the major gaps you have, not just fix them, but, you know, build the operational cycle to mitigate. And once you have that, you can scale, and now you can test more scenarios in more areas. And when you show success, also in security, it's super important to show success, right? You know, we're defenders. We're always called when something wrong is happening. And it's like always kind of looking at the downside. You want to show success. And after you show success, you can grow and scale the program. And then you start to see your security improves over time. It takes time. The other part of it, you know, a lot of people calling the blocking and tackling as the basics. I don't think that anything we do in security is basic. I think that even the blocking and tackling is complicated. You have, you know, dozens of security controls to configure them, to keep them, you know, up to date, to understand what they're doing, and to understand all, you know, all the alerts that are, you know, that you get on a daily basis. That's a complex operation. And if you can simple down and focus on the things that will matter most, then you'll be successful. There is no 100%. You cannot prevent everything and block everything and detect everything. Yeah. But to be successful, you just need to make sure that, you know, you control the impact and you can live with the risk.
So one thing I'm wondering, you know, you said how a lot of the breach and attack simulation stuff that you guys do, it's red team on steroids. So I think when there's one area that manufacturing has embraced, it's sort of the concept or the idea of penetration testing. That resonates very strongly. So when you say what you guys do takes that to the next level, could you maybe, I know no situation is typical, there's no, everything's sort of customized according to the environment and the company, but could you maybe walk us through what an average breach simulation might look like to a manufacturer?
Yeah, of course. And by the way, you'll be surprised. We have more generic, elements in our technology that customers are using across the board than unique parts. Okay. Definitely. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to grow our business to where it is now, serving all these large organizations. So basically, if you look at kind of an average manufacturer, and we have some of the largest manufacturing organizations in the world working with us, you will see an organization that is testing several manufacturing areas. And the connectivity, first of all, between the IT and OT environments. Because the first step, you don't want to deploy anything on the OT environment, but you want to kind of look at the peripheral, area and to understand what an external entity can do. So that would be the first step. We can deploy, anywhere from 10 to 100 simulators to actually start to play war games in your environment and tell you kind of what's your baseline. And from that, you will connect the system to your SIM to, understand which alerts you're getting. So everything around detection engineering. So you can, test your pipes and see that when something will happen, your team will get the right alert and will take the right action. And then you start to measure and to improve. So you will refine your configuration on your firewalls, on your EDRs, on all the controls that you have in place. And you will start to see the results populates and actually the risk is going down. One thing that we didn't plan for, and it's a byproduct and actually works beautifully, is that even the level of alerts you're getting in your SIM is reduced. So if you think about the fatigue element, and that's because when you shut down all the locks in a proper way, things will be blocked on the outer layer. And so a lot of things that usually would come in, they're no longer there. And so we also see the level of fatigue drops as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because when I think about those alerts, especially in the OT environment, the sensitivities are going to be a little bit unique depending on what you're looking at. There are some factors where a degree or two may not make a big difference. In other situations, that's critical. So in working with your customers in the industrial side, you said you're looking at IT folks and OT folks. Are you seeing them work together a little bit more than in the past? Traditionally, these have been such siloed elements of the enterprise. It's been difficult to bring them together. But I would think even in something like setting the sensitivities for these alerts, you can't have an IT guy setting those for OT personnel. And I'd be curious to see what you're seeing there in terms of them working together more.
Absolutely. And we see that collaboration happens in most of the accounts we work, with the CISO's organization. So that kind of controls both sides. But we do see the collaboration. As you said, there's no way to be efficient if you're not really having that level of correspondence between the two teams. So we do see that. We see threat teams that are actually working with both sides to understand what's the implication working, from your IT to your OT. And there is always dependencies. So yes, I do see that collaboration level.
Good. It's good to see that's improving. It's interesting how things have changed so much, really, in probably the last three and a half years in terms of cybersecurity has really been such a huge part of bringing IT and OT together. And we're seeing everybody throughout the entire enterprise really understanding how important this is and taking the proper steps. It's been cool to see. So, Guy, maybe you've been talking a little bit about some of the things that Safe Breach does. Anything else that we should know about the company before we start diving into some other topics here?
Well, it's a great question. I would say that if you look at Safe Breach, and we've kind of invented the breach and attack simulation market back in 2018. And I think since then we saw the market mature. We've decided to focus on the enterprise market. We believe that that's the Northern Star. And winning the market, it goes through the enterprise. And we've matured with this market. And today we serve, most of the large organizations on the financial side, insurance tech, and manufacturing, of course. I was surprised to see how advanced and the approach that manufacturing organizations are taking in security. And I think they're leading today in so many ways in different aspects, because as you said, the ROI is there and is measured all the time. And the need to really be on top of things and making sure that your production and operations are intact. And that's what I see in the market. We love working with these giants because it always introduces a new challenge, for us as well. Yeah. And stretches us to our limits. So it's great. And through that, we learn and evolve as well.
So, you know, I got to hit you up on a couple of different topics here that are so big in industrial cybersecurity right now. The big one, and you mentioned a lot of the permutations that you develop within your product offering to help advance and sort of evolve a lot of these attack simulations. So artificial intelligence has got to be something you're talking about on a regular basis. I mean, we talk about it all the time here, but from your perspective, I think it'd be really interesting in terms of how you, I would assume, you're using it as a huge tool to improve what you can offer to your customers.
Well, you know, AI is definitely something that, you know, I would say today is the hottest topic in the industry. And, well, there's no company that is not looking at AI, at least if not already implementing some aspects of it. I can tell you that, you know, when it was published, we are part of the Copilot program with Microsoft. And actually, you know, the way that we look at AI, there are a few elements. One of them is actually training the model. So we have a unique content that actually can train an AI model to understand what is a real attack and, you know, what's the implication. So this is one aspect that we're doing today and trying to, and I think that's, you know, it's a great benefit for the entire industry to really be able to produce product that, you know, will refine their ability to cope with security, you know, actions. And the other part is to help organizations to identify the best mitigation protocol. So, you know, the data is out there. The complexity is probably the biggest barrier in understanding, you know, which control is the best solution for the problem I have and what's the right configuration for me. And so we're working on these two elements in order to provide, you know, a unique solution to our customers together with partners like Microsoft and Palo Alto and others to really, you know, up the game in their ability to not just to automate, but to be really fast in the way that they provide a solution, because time to mitigate is critical with again, today's advantage that AI provides and other automation tools. I think time to mitigate is critical. And so we build that in order to help our customers to be as fast as possible in making sure that the gaps they have will have, you know, the shortest, you know, time out in the market. So no one can take advantage of it.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of the onus really falls right now, or can, on identifying the threat and understanding what's going on. And sometimes in the effort to do that, we forget about that really important response and mitigation part of the plan as well. So that makes a lot of sense. You know, another thing I'd like to ask you about, Guy, is as you're going through and working with companies and helping them understand what's going on through in a simulation like this, when you identify some of these vulnerabilities, how are organizations reacting to that? Do they get defensive? Do they embrace what's going on? Do they share it throughout the enterprise potentially? Because we hear about a lot of, again, getting back to the low-hanging fruit, the simple stuff like, hey, protect your logins, get a stronger password, things like that. How are you seeing that dynamic sort of expand beyond potentially just the C-suite?
That's a great question. So I definitely see, you know, a level of maturity here in the market. I see organizations that are leveraging the output of our platform to, you know, first of all, justify their strategy and their budgets. So if, you know, I need to enhance my security in a certain area, that's for a reason. And actually I can prove it out and provide the evidence for that. That's one area. The second one is to educate the organization. You know, in certain areas, you don't have, you know, you will not have the actual control that can help you to mitigate a risk. And, or the organization decided to take a risk, which is, you know, definitely viable. And in those cases, CISOs, you know, are, you know, using our platform to deliver and educate the organization with what are the risks. And now, if you know the risk and you can accept it, that's okay as a business. But it won't be something that will be a surprise when, you know, when something will happen eventually. I always give the analogy, and I see more and more organizations using that. That the great security, architecture is like a very good braking system on a Formula One car. If you don't have it, you will probably drive slow because you will be afraid to hit the wall, right? When you have a great braking system, you're taking more risk and you drive faster. And that's what we want eventually our organizations to have, you know, something that will really protect them and let them just go as fast as possible and take risks while they're doing that, because they know that at the end they will have, you know, the right controls in place to make sure that they're not hitting the wall.
Yeah. I like the analogy. That's pretty good. You know, one of these things too, it's part of some of the structure, the frameworks, whatever term you want to use, is we've seen a lot more regulation coming in from governing bodies. We see a lot in the EU. Here in the US, the SEC's gotten heavily involved in making companies report these things. Is this a positive trend? Do you like where this is going in terms of government involvement? Should we back it down a little bit? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a positive trend, and it's not enough. I think that the government has a major role in, you know, holding organizations accountable for the products they're building, for the way they handle security. If we just let, you know, the private sector to handle that, you know, the major, you know, factor to decide whether to build the right secured platform or not will not be, you know, the impact on the users. And in this specific case, because the consumers eventually, you know, might suffer, I think that the government should take a much stricter role and you know, be on top of things.
Yeah. No, interesting perspective. That's always polarizing. A lot of folks want to see more government involvement. Others say, leave us alone and let us figure it out. But I think that's interesting perspective. You know, wrapping things up, Guy, this has been fantastic. Really appreciate your thoughts on all these topics. As we look forward, what do you see as some of the maybe the bigger trends that are going to be impacting the market over the next year, year and a half?
Well, if I'll say anything else but AI, I'll probably be, you know, Mr. Maya, look, our security has been following trends for the past, you know, few decades. And it was, you know, it was cloud security. Now everyone talks about AI. I think that we'll see more and more on that. I hope that, you know, the industry will find a place to actually mature those elements and not just, you know, to find a new tool every year, because, you know, I see those organizations that are buying more and more technologies, it does not buy them more security. So being able to mature whatever you bought in to the right level will, I think in most cases, and by the way, it's already proven, most organizations don't need to buy new tools, but need to actually, you know, mature what they have and use it better. So I hope that that will be the new theme.
That's great perspective, because that is a definite issue. There are so many options out there, and we've seen studies where companies just have dozens and dozens of tools to use internally. They're not sure which ones to use, and basically that hurts that ROI we've been talking about here when it comes to cybersecurity. So
absolutely.
Interesting to see. So last question I got for you, Guy, in doing some of these simulations and working with customers, has there been anything you've come across that really surprised or shocked you that kind of stands out as, boy, I can't believe either this was prevalent, I can't believe we found it, whatever the case might be?
Unfortunately, no. I wasn't surprised. I'm in this industry for so long, you know, over 30 years. So, no, nothing surprised me. And actually, maybe the one thing that still surprises me is that organizations are, you know, still susceptible to attacks that they shouldn't be, because the data is there, the knowledge is there. So I hope to see that maturity increases, but no, in general, I'm not surprised. Sorry.
Thanks. And for more information on the work Guy and his colleagues are doing, you can check him out at safebreach.com. Thank you for joining us today. And to catch up on past episodes, you can go to manufacturing.net, IEN.com, or MBTMag.com. You can also check Security Breach out wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Amazon, and Overcast. And if you have a cybersecurity story or topic that you'd like to have us explore on Security Breach, you can reach me at jeff@ien.com. For Guy Bergerano, I'm Jeff Ranke, and this is Security Breach.